You simply can't take the Philly out of TV and film producer and director Mike Tolan. You also can't take the Philly out of his work, like Tolan's 2001 film, Summer Catch.
We put Freddie Prinze Jr. on the mound in a Phillies uniform, Lieberthal behind the plate, Pat Burrell at first base. He's got Doug Glanville in center field, and he's got Ken Griffey Jr. at the bat. And instead of him striking him out, which would be the happy ending that you expect, of course he gives up a gopher ball.
Mike Tolan talks producing the epic The Last Dance, his Phillies sports fandom, and his passion for the late Phillies great Richie Allen. Next on Fresh 24. Mike Tolan, major TV and film producer and director, executive producer of The Last Dance. Thank you for saving us during COVID. Haverford High School, huge Philly sports fan, huge Philly sports fan. And I do have one very brief Richie Allen story for you. I know you're a huge Richie guy. Wow. Mike Tolan, welcome to Fresh 24, my friend.
Great to be here, man. You should have led with Haverford. You got that whole intro backwards.
Well, I grew up in Northeast Philly and George Washington High School, and then you went to Stanford, for crying out loud. But
hey, it's like California. But I still, do you remember Steve Joachim? Do you remember Ray Edelman?
Of course. Randy Grossman. Absolutely.
Yeah, man. How about that? Steelers Super Bowl ring.
Yeah.
Haverford High. Nice.
Okay. I'm going to get to all your sports obsessions, but imagine yourself, you're at a cocktail party, you've done so much in the entertainment field, and somebody says, all right, nice to meet you, Mike. What do you do? And you got 30 seconds. Describe what you do or have done in 30 seconds.
I usually go with storyteller, although the term has been bastardized a little bit. Kobe Bryant adopted it. Okay, like Kobe was a lot of things, but like, and he won an Oscar for a short. The first thing he did, he wins an Oscar. Issues with Kobe, you know, Philly guy, not a real Philly guy. Like, what kind of guy grows up in Lower Murray and roots for the Cowboys and the Lakers? Sorry. But no, I say either storyteller or filmmaker usually.
What is top of mind for you now in terms of projects you're working on?
Man, oh man, Mark, it's a tricky market post-COVID, post-strike. I mean, we had a lot of kind of setbacks and layoffs. And what's funny is the woman I date, because I am single, although I love my ex-wife and I have two kids and we happily and very comfortably co-parent. And it's a cozy, it's about as good as a divorce can be. The woman I date says to me, so you're doing all these things like, why don't you just do what you want to do? You've been doing this long enough. Haven't you earned that? Well, you know, the market has its own idea of what they want you to do. And so if you ask me what I'm doing, you know, we sit down on Monday morning with my small but scrappy staff and we talk about 50 projects. Six of them or so are actually paying the bills. Another six are in active development and are getting close. It's a healthy mix of unscripted, mostly documentaries and a couple of format type shows. And there's four movies that are completed scripts with some attachments and some heat behind them. Hopefully, you know, we make one a year for the next couple few years, but it really does require you to take a macro lens, juggle a lot of things, try to focus on your passions, try to, you know, I'll always, you know, exert more energy for a Richie Allen project than, you know, a project about the Lakers or a team I don't care about. But I will say also that in the last decade or so, we've been doing more and more non-sports shows, and it's exhilarating to occasionally do a show without a scoreboard or without bats and balls. And I'll do just a quick plug because the next thing up is something called Justice USA. It's a 6 1-hour documentary series on the criminal justice series where we were embedded in Nashville, Tennessee for a year. And we made 6 hours, which is riveting, heartbreaking. And it really gives you a sense of both sides of the table, the public defenders, the district attorneys, but mainly puts you in the shoes of the criminal defendants and see how their lives are hanging in the balance and how they navigate through it. So that's on Max in March, and I'm really proud of it.
Mm. You should be proud of a lot of things. And I have a partial, just a small list of credits. I'm going to reel them off here. The Last Dance, Radio, Good Burger, Zookeeper's Wife, One Tree Hill, Coach Carter, Varsity Blues, Arliss, and one of my personal faves, Summer Catch. I love all the Phillies references. Is that a priority for you sometimes when you have an opportunity to go Philly on people?
Of course. Why not, man? That's an indulgence that I allow myself. And if you're from Philly, you snicker, you smile, you go, oh, he's one of us. And if you aren't, you don't even notice that I said Clay Darrenbaugh, right? You don't even notice that in the coda, you know, the finale of Summer Catch, which I guess you know well, it sounds like, we put Freddie Prinze Jr. on the mound in a Phillies uniform. He's got Lieberthal behind the plate. He's got Pat Burrell at first base. He's got Doug Glanville in center field. And he's got Ken Griffey Jr. at the bat. And instead of him striking him out, which would be the happy ending that you expect, of course he gives up a gopher ball.
Yeah,
Griffey goes yard. So a lot of Philly references. We had the Muck Dogs, you know, a Phillies minor league team at that point. And, you know, I go back, gosh, it's 60 years of rooting for our teams, Mark. So, yeah, I put them in there whenever I can.
All right, so let's stay there. And I'm going to go back about 60 years to 1964. And for all you young kids out there, Google it, okay? 64 Phillies. It's amazing how we obsess, you know, the 6.5 games up with 12 to play. Chico Ruiz steals home at Connie Mack Stadium. The Reds beat the Phillies 1-0, and it just falls apart. You think the Eagles collapse was unbelievable? This was like twice that, especially since this was a team that was young. They weren't expected to do anything. You pick it up from there. What was it like for you to see and hear all that?
I was 8. I went to Jaime's. My dad and mom had just split up. So we'd have a Thursday night dinner at our favorite deli on off City Line Avenue. And he said, guess what, kids? I got a surprise. Larry is 11. I'm 8. Cindy is 6. The three of us. He's got 4 tickets to the World Series. We're only 2 weeks away. As you said, we're 6.5 up. It's a foregone conclusion, right? So every night I go and say goodnight, Mom, and I put the earplug in my ear and I bury the transistor radio under the pillow, and I end up in tears as it goes bunting and short, bunting and short, bunting and short, and we lose 10 in a row. Yeah, Dave Montgomery, dear friend, we lost him a few years ago to cancer, ran the Phillies. He was there. He's the only guy I know. Do you know anybody who was at the Chico Ruiz game?
No. Well, let's put it this way. It's one of those events where, you know, I was there, sure. You know, like Wilt scoring 100.
Yeah, it's like 50,000 people in Hershey for that 100-point game.
Right, exactly.
But so Frank Robinson's at bat, and Chico Ruiz steals home in the 6th inning. We lose 1-0. And then the floodgates, well, the opposite of the floodgates opening. The floodgates just closed, and you know, Gene Mock, tight as a drum. You know, what gets forgotten, and it goes to our mutual hero, Richie Allen, we're 2 games back on the last day of the year. No, game and a half back. We got a doubleheader. The Cardinals are playing the Mets, I think. We're playing the Reds. We win the first game, and they lose the first game, and we're like, we have a shot. And I remember going back to my dad's apartment at the Philadelphia and watching on WOR, Channel 9, the Mets channel. And if the Mets beat them, we got a tie and we go to a playoff. But, of course, they didn't. Cardinals win by a game. But Richie Allen killed during that whole streak. He had like 435 or something. I mean, you can look it up. He had a bunch of hits that last day. He didn't choke. It seemed like everybody around him did. But it's funny you compare it to this year because all this all the pundits I listen to, you know, wake up in the morning, I listen to Philly Sports Talk Radio. I read online the Daily News and the Inquirer sports sections. And everybody wanted to list all of our epic collapses in order. And it's really, I think this year's Eagles collapse goes right up there with the 64 Phillies. I think that's 1A and 1B.
All right, let's talk Richie Allen, because you loved him growing up. I loved him growing up. It's hard to put into words what kind of a player he was, simply because there are a lot of people who, you know, alive now who never saw him play. He had a stance where he would hold the bat almost upright, and then he would like buggy whip the bat and come around. And this bat was huge. He had immense power. He had issues as a rookie in the field. I think he committed 20-some errors.
I think 41.
But he was, oh, 40-some. Oh, my goodness. Okay. But my point to you is, when he came to bat, you stopped whatever you were doing, and you watched him hit.
No TiVo, right? So there's no, like, push-pause. It's I'll be right in, Mom. Just, you know, Richie's on deck, or Richie's up, or whatever. And, you know, he's going to hit it over the roof, you think, every time he comes to bat. Now, people who grew up with the Vet or Citizens Bank Park, they don't know what that means. But, like, Connie Mack Stadium had billboards on top of the roof of, you know, multi-deck stadium, and nobody hit it over the roof but him. And he did it, I don't know, a dozen times. I really don't know. But I have all these play-by-play calls with Bill Campbell and Bisom and Richie Ashburn, and it's just like, whoa, there it goes. It's just, it's goosebumps for me. And then, you know, to have a hero who becomes my friend. I was out at school on the West Coast in the 70s, and he was playing for the Oakland A's. That's where he finished his career, wearing number 60 instead of Allen on the jersey. Do you know what it said?
No.
Wampum.
Wow.
So Richie Allen was from Wampum, PA. He went to Wampum High. And so he put 60. He was the class of 1960. That's when he graduated and got signed as a bonus baby by the Phillies. And he put Wampum as an homage to his school. And he finished his career there with nothing great, just kind of slowly faded into the sunset. And I was a Cub reporter working for the Stanford radio station, and my knees were knocking. You know what it's like to go meet your hero as a kid.
Sure.
It's a long story. I won't take up your time now, but I will say that here we are 4.5 decades later. We're making a movie for Paramount Pictures. The working title is Letters in the Dirt. Mark, tell your audience why that.
Well, because he would literally, and this is when things began to unravel, and I want to say he was playing even first base at the time, he was playing first base at the time, and he would literally take with his spikes his foot and drag it in the dirt, and you'd have to tell me what it is that he actually spelled out, but
I will.
That was an unbelievable thing. This is before Twitter, and that's how you tweeted back then.
So he wrote Coke, because it was the Coca-Cola sign that he was going to hit the ball over. He wrote boo, because that's what he heard most often. Oh, boy, did he hear it. Mm. And he wrote mom, because she was the only one in the world who could tell him what to do.
Wow. How much of your film, to me, the fascinating thing about him was that he was a black man in the 60s. So with that backdrop, or let me ask you, how much of your film includes that backdrop and the effect that race relations at the time may have had on him?
A lot. He died during the pandemic. The 8-column banner headline in the New York Times said something like, Slugger overcomes racial abuse to, you know, excel. It was a little more poetic than that. But what happened was at a Paramount creative meeting, this is December of 2020, somebody brought in that article. And this guy named Jeremy Kramer, an executive for Paramount who considers himself a baseball fan, sees this and goes, I never heard of this guy. And he goes, wait, I know who to call. He calls me up and he goes, Mike, hi, Jeremy. I haven't talked to you for a while. Yeah, what's up? You're the Philly guy, right, Mike? And I go, I've been called worse. I wear it on my sleeve, Mark. You know, everybody in LA, like, you know, I have a crew of Philly expats who come over to watch the Eagles games, and we have cheesesteaks and hoagies, and they're all Philly. They're all hardcore Philly fans. And what the one thing I will never understand is the people who grow up in a town. I mean, a town like Philly or Boston or New York or like East Coast, where it's like really part of your identity. They move to LA or somewhere, Arizona or San Francisco. Oh, I'm a Dodger fan now. I'm a 49er fan now. Really? Did you change your parents too? I mean, it's like, it's who you are.
Right.
Of course. I can't even imagine.
Of course.
So anyway, so I said, yeah, I'm the Philly guy. And he goes, like, did you ever hear of a guy named Richie Allen? And I laughed. Nah, I never. Okay.
Not right.
Okay. Well, do you want to do a movie? Well, I was making a documentary because Summer Catch, again, the movie you mentioned, I brought him from Wampum to shoot with us in North Carolina, and he shot a scene as a scout. I brought him to New Orleans to shoot a scene with Kurt Russell in a movie called Dreamer. And so, you know, we were friends and we were hanging out, and we, you know, I got to know him really well. And I started making a documentary every time we were together. I would just shoot a camera, right? Mm. And it wasn't like iPhones back then, but mm-hmm. So I had 20 years and several hundred hours of footage.
Wow.
And the guy goes, well, do you want to make a real movie? And I said, and we started negotiating. I said, look, some of this stuff is gold, so let's make kind of a hybrid. And that's what we're doing. We have a second draft of a script, and there's a lot of documentary elements in it, and there's some mm-hmm. mixing newsreels. When you talk about, you know, the racism of a very polarized Philadelphia in the 60s, Frank Rizzo, you know, was the police chief, and then he ascended to the mayor's office, and he was a law and order dude. And when I say law and order, it was like, you know, very, very physical, very much violence on violence. There was a riot. They called it a race riot in 1964. There's black and white footage that I went back and was looking at during the pandemic and during the Black Lives Matter protests. It looked the same, except it was in black and white. Hmm. And so that turned things, you know. It was a honeymoon season in 64. He's the rookie of the year. He had 318, 29 homers, 91 RBIs. Phillies almost won. And then it started souring a little bit. And he's a very independent guy. And he was, you know, from a small town. And he was kind of bashful and just sort of withdrew. And it was perceived as arrogance and militance and like, sweetest, most peace-loving, mama-fearing, great guy you could ever meet. And I, you know, he knows my family and I know his family. I'm friends with his widow and his kids. And we will continue with John Middleton in the middle of the effort. We will continue until we get him enshrined in Cooperstown.
Please. That's got to happen. Listen. Again, for the young kids out there, it's a couple of OGs here. We're going to keep old school. I want to talk about Sixers from back in the day, of course. But first, it's halftime. And at halftime, we feature our six-pack of questions. It is brought to you by Garage Beer, beer-flavored beer. Find some near you at drinkgaragebeer.com. All right, Mike, I'm going to give you a choice between two things, and you just blurt out the answer, okay? I don't want you to think about it. Just blurt it out. Blurt. Are you ready?
Ready.
Philly cheesesteak or Philly soft pretzel?
Soft pretzel.
Center City or South Jersey?
South Jersey.
Gritty or Philly fanatic?
Fanatic.
Meek Mill or Hall & Oates?
Hall & Oates by a mile.
Dr. J or Allen Iverson throwback?
AI every
wow.
day.
Wow. Liberty Bell or Rocky Steps?
Liberty Bell.
Okay. That six-pack of questions brought to you by Garage Beer, beer-flavored beer. Find some near you at drinkgaragebeer.com. And now I am going to venture into my music library. I'm going to give you a handful of artists from my library. You tell me if you have them in yours. Are you ready?
Ready.
Biggie Smalls.
Love it when you call me Big Papa. We did a movie.
Oh, thank you. Okay. Okay, thank you. Tears for Fears.
Everybody Wants to Rule the World, also in a movie that we did for 30 for 30.
Wow. You're good at this. Dave Brubeck.
You know, I know him, but no, he's not in my library.
Okay. Stevie Wonder.
Oh, sure. Inner Visions, on and on and on. Goes way, way back till fingertips, you know, when he was like 12 years old, little Stevie Wonder. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Marvin Gaye.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. The early Marvin Gaye, like mid-60s Marvin Gaye. Yes.
Yeah.
Decades and decades of Marvin Gaye. Never saw him in person, but I listened to him a lot.
So you sound like you're really into your music. How involved do you get in the music when it's going to be part of a feature film?
Very. But let me stop and just pay homage. It's funny because none of the choices are real Philly sound. I mean, right? There's Motown in there and some jazz. But it's funny, you didn't give me like a Teddy Pendergrass or a Billy Paul. I got friendly with Kenny Gamble. For those, again, we're like doing this OG thing, but in 1971, Gamble and Huff, Kenny Gamble and Leon Huff, started Philadelphia International Records. Clive Davis gave them a label. It was the first Black-owned label in American music history. And the Philly Sound is a movie or a documentary that I've tried to make a million different times, a million different ways. I'm not giving up. Not sure if it's going to happen. Some other people are trying to do it. But when I started doing the movie Radio in 2003, it was set because, again, these are some of the indulgences. That was a movie I produced and directed. So you get to really play King. And we were doing a story about this mentally challenged young man in a small town in South Carolina and his relationship with the head football coach. And it had been going on for decades. And I decided to do the story in 1 year. And so I get to choose the year. So I chose 1973, the year I graduated from Haverford High School. And I got to make the soundtrack, basically my 45s collection. So if you ever find the soundtrack, I have one sitting on the wall over there. Every one of those songs is in a jukebox sitting at my house at home.
Wow. Hey, so, what's your earliest? Go ahead. I'm sorry. Finish.
No. It's really one of the fun.
Yeah.
One of the most fun parts of making a movie and being creative.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by that whole process. Your earliest 76ers memory.
My dad used to take me to the arena and to Convention Hall, I guess before the Spectrum was built. There's a game so we won in 67. I have some great Sixers memorabilia. I'd love to take you on a tour. Next time we do this, I'll take the iPad around the room and you'll see all my memorabilia. So the year before we finally beat the Celtics in 67. So I want to say it was 66. It could have been 65. Billy Cunningham had just come up. Isn't it cool to think we had a championship team that had a future Hall of Famer on the bench, right?
Yes, yes.
Because couldn't break in with Luke Jackson and Chet Walker.
Right.
But so the year before, there had been some kind of fire or construction thing. For whatever reason, we're playing at Convention Hall. And Dolph Schayes is sitting in front of my dad and me and my brother, and he's tall.
Is he coaching the team?
No,
then?
No, he's done by then.
Okay.
I think it's Alex Hannum by then.
Okay, so this was 67.
No, it's the year before. Is that his first year?
67? I think Schayes may have been, you know what? It's either 66 or 67. I think Schayes may have gone to 66 and then Hannum took over, and the year he took over, they won the title. That's what I think.
Okay, so somebody could look this up. Dolph Schayes is sitting in the stands in street clothes. Billy Cunningham goes, we're playing, I think, the Knicks in the Eastern semis, and Cunningham breaks something and he's out for the rest of the playoffs. So we're going to lose to the Celtics and it's going to be wait till next year. And then, of course, we finally win. And then 68, I remember the game where MLK gets shot, and somehow or other, the powers that be decide that we're going to play anyway. We have a 3-1 lead against the Celtics, and it gets to 3-2, and it comes back to Philly. And that's the game where Wilt doesn't take a shot in the fourth quarter, and we lose our 3-1 lead, and the Celtics win the series in 7 games. And so, you know, we had one. You know, and then the Phillies had won in 1980, and then the Sixers had won in 83, and, you know, that's all we got for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me give you a stat.
Okay,
like,
go ahead.
People are always talking about, woe is me, Detroit hasn't gotten this far since 57, the Jets haven't won since 69. I said, all right, So I've been around for a while. I've been a fan. If you start from 30, from 64, right? I'm going to do 60 years times three teams. I'm not going to count the Flyers because they came in and out. Okay. So there's 180 finishes, three teams, 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
We're 5 for 180 in my lifetime as a fan.
Listen, I was in Minneapolis when the Eagles won the Super Bowl. After I came home, I said, I'm dying a happy man. That's it. Yeah, I never thought I would see it. So there.
Well, my son is 18 and I raised him in LA as a Eagles, Sixers and Phillies fan. He said to me, Dad, I don't think it's going to happen in your lifetime. So wow. We both cried. We went to that game and I cried for my father who had passed away, and he cried for his father who we actually got to go to the game with.
Right.
And then we went again last year and I cried for Bradbury pulling that jersey, man. I just dream of, like, somebody's got to do a simulated game of them, like, holding the flag, them kicking the field goal, Jalen getting the ball with a minute 45 left and two timeouts. You know he's going to at least tie the game and probably win it for us, right?
Right.
Yeah.
All right. I did want to ask you about today's Sixers. And what is really a frustrating situation with Joel Embiid and his injury issues. What's your read on that?
Well, I don't know when this is going to air, but as of today, which is Thursday, February 1, he's not going to play at Utah. Joel is on his way back to Philly. He did an MRI. They didn't really tell us the results, except that we know he's sitting out tonight's game. I think starting Saturday with the game in Denver, it's been a debacle. I mean, so he doesn't play, but he's not on the injured list already. So the Sixers are in trouble, and I think they got fined for it, right? And the report was he was working out before the game, and medical reports where he couldn't go, and so he didn't go. But, of course, everybody thinks he's ducking the Joker because he hasn't played in Denver since 19. I think he's missed 4 out of 6. Okay, so the optics are bad, and now we come back. And we're playing the other night and against the Warriors, and he probably shouldn't have played. But I think this is pure speculation as a fan. I love this team. I really feel good about this team. I feel great about Nick Nurse. I love the Joel, Maxi, Tobias with some great role players. I really think we got a shot. I'm really optimistic, so I'm just hoping this is a blip. But whether it's the backlash from Denver or the pressure to get in those 65 games so he qualifies for the awards, whatever it was, JoJo goes out there and it's just, you know, a shadow of what he's been. He's, you know, 20-some games in a row scoring over 30. It was just kind of a nightmare performance. And then he really gets hurt, and now we don't know how long he's out. Here's the silver lining. I'm saying the good news is that he's not going to make the 65 games no matter what. It's going to take the pressure off him to play enough games to qualify. He's already won an MVP. So let's say he plays 58 games. He's going to have more time off, less wear and tear, and maybe for the first time in his career, he's going to come to the playoffs fully healthy, which is all we really care about.
You were actually the exec producer of an Allen Iverson doc back in 2014, I believe. What did you uncover about him after you made the film that you really didn't know beforehand?
It's a great question. That's a tricky one, Mark, because most of the projects we do that have our name on them, we actually originated them. We developed them from scratch. That was another one of those, hey, Mike, you're the Philly guy, right? We got a problem. We're halfway through this film with Allen Iverson and we can't quite finish it and we don't have enough money and we don't know what to do with it. So I kind of stepped in, you know, kind of downstream. I didn't spend a lot of time with them. But I did help re-edit it. I did help put some resources into it. I got it into the Tribeca Film Festival. I said to the producers who came to me, look, I don't need to make any money out of this thing. I just want to help put it on its feet. All I really want is to finish this film and get a photo of my daughter and me and Alan on a red carpet somewhere. And I have that at the Tribeca Film Festival. We had a packed house. We got a great review in the New York Times. We sold it to Showtime. I honestly, he's just one of those magical guys. I went up and gave the introduction to the film, and I said, you know, Wilt won us a title, Dr. J won us a title, but AI won our hearts like nobody else, right? I mean, there's something about him. We never quite got there. The 01 season was magical, but, you know, we fell a little short to the Lakers, but there's just something about him. We'll always love him.
Yeah, 2001 was our Rocky story. We just didn't have time for a sequel.
Well,
get that done, please?
Okay. A little bit of poetic license, right?
Mike, listen, you've spent a lifetime peeking behind the curtain of sports. I would think that your innocence as a kid watching the Sixers at the arena or the Phillies at CONEMAX Stadium, that's gone. Was it replaced by anything that, I don't know, may have dimmed your enthusiasm for sports or perhaps increased your enthusiasm for sports?
My kids being born and me sharing those experiences, you know, in a different kind of way, in a certain way, increased it. I'm so grateful that however it's been, I've avoided getting cynical. That don't get too close to your heroes. I've made a career out of it, and I'm so grateful, you know, from Richie Allen to Henry Aaron, which is one of the things you didn't mention that I'm maybe proudest of, because doing Chasing the Dream with Hank Aaron, we started a foundation and raised millions of dollars for underserved inner city kids. And he turned out to be, I mean, there really was a lineage, you know, what he went through a decade before Richie Allen. So sharing it, you know, I remember how my dad felt, and now I get to be the dad and take my kids, and they're right there with me. So how lucky could I be?
Why do we love sports so much? Why should we even care?
Community. I mean, you know, it's anything I'm going to say to answer that question is going to sound cliched because somebody said it before me and better than me. But, you know, when I sit there in Sherman Oaks, California, with a dozen knuckleheads from various parts of the greater Philadelphia area on a Sunday, screaming and yelling, and I mean, like, oh, man, during those last, after 10-1, right, the last six games, including the playoff game, it was really quiet. But we're in it together. It feels real. It connects us. You know, and at the end of the day, you can go back to your lives and realize, you know, your life didn't really change, but the passion is real and the sharing is real. And I, you know, friends for life. And I don't know what's more important than that. So I'm really grateful.
Well, I got to say, I'm grateful for the time. It was way too short. You're making a doc on the Eagles long snapper, John Dornbos. You had ownership in a minor league team. You had Jimmy Rollins and Shane Victorino narrate your kid's bar mitzvah video. I got so much I need to talk about. Will you promise to come back again?
I'll come back anytime. Awesome. Let's get past the second round, right?
And then yeah, that's the goal. That's it. Right, Mike Tolan, thank you so much for being on Fresh 24.
Pleasure. Thanks, Mark.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to this episode of Fresh 24. Please subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. Check out our friends over at Philadelphia Sports Nation, a local Philadelphia sports site covering your favorite teams across blogs and social media. PHLSportsNation.com. Philadelphia Sports Nation. PHL Sports Nation. Enhancing your Philadelphia sports fan experience.